Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Paul Gallant. Join the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
Here it is. It's in Minshew's hand, and a drop by Goodson. Texans make the stop, and they take over up by six.
That is how your Houston Texans clinched a playoff berth Saturday night before Derrick Henry and the Tennessee Titans took out the Jaguars, took out the trash, and helped Houston win an AFC South for the seventh time in franchise history. All seven times the Texans have made the playoffs, they have won the AFC South. Hang that in the rafters, baby. Tyler Goodson was the Colts running back who was unable to catch that pass. And it was surprising that he was on the field, because if you had watched any of Saturday night's game, you would know that Jonathan Taylor was the only player on the field that was as dominant as Nico Collins. He was incredible. Honestly, the Texans' run defense has a lot of looking at itself in the mirror to do. They're the fourth-ranked run defense in the league, and Jonathan Taylor ran for nearly 200 yards on them. There was a 7.5-minute stretch in the third quarter where the Colts had 100 yards rushing. Insane. You want to be on pace, guy? That would be on pace for 800 yards rushing in a game. So you would think, fourth and one, season on the line, Jonathan Taylor, a guy who got banged up earlier in the game with, I guess, a heel injury of some sort, but came back in after being called doubtful and played very well when he came back in. After the Colts called a timeout where they were trying to draw the Texans off, which they did a couple of times, the only time the Texans didn't get penalized on Saturday night, 11 penalties for 69 yards, good God. And they come out of the timeout with no Jonathan Taylor on the field. Shane Steichen pulled D'Amico Ryan's pants down in week one. Jonathan Taylor should have been on the field for that play. I don't care how hurt he was. So poor Tyler Goodson has a ball thrown to him by Gardner Minshew. It wasn't the best throw. It goes off his hands. And the Texans end up walking away with the win. Goodson, after the game, did not hide from the media, but you could tell this kid's devastated.
I worked too hard to, you know, just drop the ball like that. And I got to accept that, and that's okay.
It was a drop, but it's a tough throw.
It still touched my hands. It's all good. It's all good. Touched my hands. But next year, I won't be in that position ever again. Ever again.
You guys, I mean, you run plays with that work during the week, so you're out there all week and that for that play. You've been in for that play the whole time.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We've been repping that play all week. I knew that play was for me. And when we called it, it was just all about making the play. And when that ball came to me, I happened to fail today. But, hey, I'm standing tall. It's over. A lot of the guys came up to me, keep your head up. You know what I'm saying? Never lose my confidence. Just keep being me and keep being myself, and that's what I'm going to continue to do.
When you got off to the sideline right after that, just what was the reaction from the team? What were you feeling at that moment?
Honestly, I was just feeling like a failure. I know I'm not a failure. I'm going to just state that. But I felt a lot of love from the teammates, everybody telling me to keep my head up. But me just being me, I'm always hard on myself. And I know I could have made that play, and that play should have been made. I just got to go back to the drawing board, just keep working on my craft, and come back next year even better.
I feel bad for him. I do. I should not feel bad for an Indianapolis Colt, but Jonathan Taylor should have been on the field for that play. Did you hear that one reporter, by the way, asking, so you practiced that play all week, huh? Like, damn, yeah. Like, to twist the knife a little bit more. It wasn't even a question. It was just like, so yeah, you guys were practicing that play all week? Right. And I mean, there were two throws to Goodson in this game. There was the third down throw on the first drive of the game where Minshew threw a bad throw. I don't know if Stingley could have perhaps jumped it and pick-sixed it. And then you have that one. And I feel bad for him because that is probably what he's going to be remembered for his entire life, is dropping a pass in a playoff game unless he makes up for it somehow. So I feel really bad for that guy. And credit to him standing in front of people and answering questions while he's crying. I feel bad. I want to give him a hug. The hug that Hannah didn't give me. Whoa. What's that noise, John?
I mean, yeah. I don't feel bad, though.
You don't feel bad for him?
No.
Come on,
I get what you're saying.
He sounded so sad.
I get what you're saying. They all sound sad after losses. You know, if he would have caught that, you know who would have sounded sad on the postgame press conference? CJ Stroud. Nico Collins would have sounded sad in the postgame press conference.
That's true.
I mean, you throw the game on the line, you throw to a running back from Iowa. That's what you get. All right?
So that's on Steichen.
You get an Iowa running back out in space. He's going to drop the ball. That tale as old as time. It is 100% on Steichen. It is because you say if you're trying to defend Steichen, you'd be like, well, Jonathan Taylor is banked up. He missed time in that game. I'm looking at the ESPN, like, play-by-play.
They called a timeout right before, Sean.
Well, A, they called a timeout right before, which I don't super mind. I mean, I mind because of what happened afterwards.
That's what I mean.
But in the moment, like, that is the game right there.
Yeah.
Like, even if you have all three timeouts, you're asking Gardner Minshew to drive 70 yards to score a touchdown.
They were trying to do it the cheap way by drawing the Texans off.
Yes.
Which they did a couple of times in this
but
game.
Before that, it's Jonathan Taylor run up the middle. This is just going backwards. Jonathan Taylor run up the middle. Jonathan Taylor on the left. John Taylor on the right. John Taylor up the middle. Jonathan Taylor on the right. Jonathan Taylor up the middle.
That's insane.
Jonathan Taylor up the middle.
So he was the whole drive.
It was the entire drive. So you could say that, you know, he was banged up, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. He was healthy the six previous plays. They're riding him all the way down the field. Unless he horribly re-aggravated himself on the last one before the timeout. I don't see how that's not Jonathan Taylor in that situation. It's crazy to me that that's not Jonathan Taylor.
Same here. I do not know what was happening there. It's a case of an offensive coordinator getting cute. And we've seen it a couple of times with Bobby Slowick. Coordinators do this all the time. Yeah. Coaches do this all the time. But, Sean, I didn't know it was every single play on the drive. Because he was doubtful to come back in until that drive. And he strapped on his helmet. Like, credit to that guy. Like,
yeah.
He was doubtful to return. He came back in. And he legitimately put the Colts on his back to get to that spot. And you would think, if you call a timeout, you're trying to give Jonathan Taylor a blow there, too. That's an added perk of the timeout. So he can go back out there for the biggest play of the season. And they put this poor kid in there, and now this kid's going to have to deal with this like the rest of his life. And it wasn't a good throw by Minshew. And you saw the little back and forth between Shane Steichen and Minshew. Like, Steichen was yelling at Minshew as he was coming off of the field.
I think that clip, I think it was Robert Mays from The Athletic pointed out that clip is from earlier in the game.
Oh, people are so misleading. I bought that hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
the tweet was also from like a little bit before. It was one of those things where like no one saw the tweet until after the fact.
Right.
And so
okay.
Everyone just thought, hey, you know the play where Gardner Minshew kind of blew the game? Yeah, no, it was from before.
Right.
Okay. Or at least that's what Robert May says. I don't know. But, yeah, I do think that Gardner Minshew doesn't get enough flack for how bad that throw was.
He sucked. He was terrible in this game.
Gardner Minshew is not good.
Every single time he was pressured, he missed his throws by a mile.
And it was like getting on my nerves a little bit with the whole Gardner Minshew thing. I mean, it's like,
oh, yeah, with all the promos on ESPN.
Yeah, where he's making
break and he's
silly
looking,
faces.
Right, he's being a goofball.
Yeah, and I'm like, how? I mean,
that's fun in October.
Also, yes, and also we're on year like 5 of Gardner Minshew as a goofball. Like, get a new shtick, dude. Like, get a new shtick or like national media stop falling in love with this guy.
But Sean,
like,
you have
this
to
guy
have a shtick.
He sucks.
You have to have a shtick, though. You have
I guess.
To. Well, I mean,
yeah,
how are you going to make money?
Trevor Siemian needs a stick.
He does
a shtick then, because there's no difference between him and Gardner Minshew.
Damn, that's cold, but it's true.
Like, what are we talking about here? Mason Rudolph, well, he has a shtick, but he needs a he needs a better shtick. Because Mason Rudolph took his team to the playoffs.
He did.
Against all odds. Gardner Minshew gets to have a goofy mustache and a van, and all of a sudden Troy Aikman's chuckling every time he shows him on camera.
If it's in October, it's cute. And honestly, like, this is Gardner Minshew
needs to
do this.
It's cute when it's on the Jags, too.
But Minshew needs to do this because, like, in his post-career, he's going to have a reality TV show. So he has to stay on brand. He has to.
Yeah, he's going to have a reality YouTube show, maybe.
Well, probably.
I don't think.
You think it'll be better than the life of Lotto?
Actual network is giving money to a backup quarterback.
I don't know though. I mean, like, Tommy DeVito's probably getting a TV show because he's just going straight out of the league. He's not a good quarterback.
He is.
He's not good.
This year really did show how important it is for backup quarterbacks. Just have a thing. Have a thing we can latch onto.
Right.
Because, I mean...
But we don't want too much of it, like with Gardner Minshew. We got a little too much of it.
Yes. DJ Bienemy knocked it out of the park when he was talking about Case Keenum having to play two games. And he was like, normally with a backup quarterback, you can float it for one game, and it's not that big of a drop-off.
The second game, it's like, oh my God.
He was like, second game around halftime is normally when it all comes crashing down. And he knocked it out of the park considering how the Browns game went with Case Keenum. And with basically every backup quarterback we've seen thus far, there's like Josh Dobbs. There's like a little bump and then a fall-off. All these guys have, you know, Tommy DeVito, awful bump, awful again.
And to go back to Case Keenum, Case Keenum's shtick is he's been
from
in Houston forever.
Yes.
And he gets a big Houston victory over the Titans wearing Oilers uniforms. Like, his shtick, it's good. In and out. We're done.
Yes. That's exactly it. And you don't have Troy Aikman being like, let me tell you, this guy, that's a little
Chris Collinsworth.
Don't disrespect Aikman like that. Aikman was doing a lot of yucking it up when it's like, and Gardner Minshew, let me tell you, is kind of a character. It's like, yeah, we know. Yeah.
You do a pretty good Collinsworth, I think, if you workshop that.
Yeah, I could work on it.
I think you know what, I'll listen to,
I'm sure he's doing a game this week, right?
Is he going to be on Peacock or is he going to be on?
If he's on Peacock, he should fire his agent.
That's Sean Mapes. I'm Paul Gallant. It's the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Shane Steichen got too cute on that 4th-and-1. Bobby Slowick got more than cute on that first play of the game. Let's talk about that first play of the game because that's probably the greatest moment for the Houston Texans in Indianapolis ever. It's the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Hey, what happened?
And every time something would go wrong, I would look at the camera and say, hey, what happened?
Back to the Veritex Community Bank Studios and your favorite 10 to noon sports talk host, Paul Gallant. Give him hell, Paulie.
As Stroud, little play action to start. Good protection. Airs it out for Collins. He's got it. One play, touchdown, Texans.
I was in my condo with my cat watching the Texans ultimately clinch a playoff berth on Saturday night. I had my window open to my patio, Florida-themed patio. It's got a lot of light blue and pink. It looks great. And I shouted so loud when that touchdown happened. It was only the second loudest that I had shouted this weekend because I was on hold with American Express Travel and I and American Airlines. And I yelled at one point. But I yelled very loud when that play happened. And we talked about Steichen and the Colts offense getting a little bit too cute in the last segment. The way that Bobby Slowick chose to open the game up, I am sure we are once again now dreading the inevitable hiring of Bobby Slowick as a head coach somewhere else.
You,
I'm sure it's happening somewhere else, Sean.
You, Bobby Slowick, are an Atlanta Falcon. Congratulations.
You want it with Bijan, huh?
Get ready. I mean, it just seems like he's he seems like he would fix a lot of the ills there.
You think so?
I imagine they would get an
offensive
guy.
Which would be giving the ball to
the best
Bijan.
Players.
I don't know. He gets a little cute sometimes.
He does
Bobby
get a little
Slowick.
Cute. They all get cute.
He didn't get cute, though, in that moment right there. He just said, you know what?
No.
How about our best receiver just run straight down the field and we throw it as far as we possibly can?
And it's also a situation where I guarantee you that, I mean, because the defensive coordinator for the Colts, do you know who the defensive coordinator? It's Gus Bradley.
Yes.
And so they play the cover three zone.
All the time.
They're still doing that.
Even though Tom Brady used to destroy it, you're right. It's
they're doing
always
that 95% of the time. They're in cover three. So I guarantee you that's a, like, well, we know they're going to be cover three the first play of the game.
Right, and it's legitimately a matter of, can you catch that safety in the middle of the cover three sleeping? And guess what? They caught him sleeping.
Yeah, they ran Schultz, like, shallow in front of the safety. The safety stepped up, and they hit Collins deep one-on-one.
It was a beautiful call.
It was fantastic. Again, I'm glad all these Seattle defensive guys are still making money in the league, running the same defense for 10 years. That's really awesome. Without Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas
and Richard Sherman. The defense does still work to an extent, but when it goes up against great quarterbacks, and C.J. Stroud is not a good, he is a great quarterback, they're going to pick you apart. And it was really interesting hearing after the game, everyone talking about it, because you see a play like that the first play of the game, which ultimately was the first and only time all season that a team scored on its first offensive play from scrimmage. You could tell they had prepared for that all week long, and they must have had, imagine thinking to yourself before the game starts, like, we're doing this on the first play of the game. Like, how are you not low-key, like, palpitating? Your cockle in your heart, it's very warm. It's a very warmed cockle. Because you're thinking about bombing that bad boy downfield to open the game.
Yeah, and it is like the ultimate, like, make a statement type play. I mean, because the NFL, they're not as bad as football teams used to be, like, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago, where it's like, let me guess, the first play is going to be a run up the middle. But teams normally do, like, kind of work themselves into the game a little bit. If it's not a run up the middle, it'll be like a screen pass, it'll be something short. To be like, nope, guys, the first play of the game, we're chucking it.
We're chucking it, baby.
We're running a post with Nico Collins.
Stop us.
And just throw it as hard as you can, CJ Stroud.
And it was a hell of a throw.
On the money.
It was a hell of a throw.
He had so many plays, CJ Stroud did, so many plays that were, the accuracy is just insane.
There was one throw I bet he wishes he had back where he had Dalton Schultz wide open on the right sideline and he overthrew the hell out of them. But you're right. The accuracy is incredible. And some of the throws that Stroud made in this game in particular, while he's backing up still.
Yeah. The one
over the middle to Collins?
Yes.
Or the one to the right sideline
to get
Collins?
To the three. Yes. Both of them.
Incredible.
But I was thinking about the one to get to the 3 yard line, the one that set up the touchdown. That one where he is like just backing up and just off his back foot. Flips it, and then Collins just goes up and gets it.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it's an insane play.
So they were talking about this play, as I said, with their cockles in their heart palpitating. Sorry, we're killing that phrase today because we heard Jim Harbaugh say that when talking about Nico Collins. D'Amico Ryan said that they've been working on that play for a while.
Awesome throw, awesome catch, something we have been working and. You know, when Bobby called it, I was like, oh, here it is. So just credit to Nico, right, and CJ for also, man, great ball placement and putting that ball exactly where it needed to be, and Nico going up and making that catch. And I have been telling Nico, hey, he's been catching a lot of deep ones, but he's been stumbling and falling, not getting in the end zone. This time, stayed up and got in the end zone. Biggest play of the year for him.
And he's had a lot of big plays this season. Because remember, he had that big catch and run. I think it was against the Pittsburgh Steelers as well to ice things in that blowout victory. Nico Collins, Michigan standout, go blue today, said, we knew what the first play was going to be this entire week. That must have been a fun moment.
We knew first play was an entire week, man. Even yesterday, doing walkthrough, man. You know, defense gave us the look we wanted. Seven trusted me. I trusted him, man. The ball's going to be there. And that's what we did. You know, he told me just run. And that's what I did. Got it. Made a play for the squad.
Made a play for the squad. I do love that the Texans, someone on the Twitch brought up how they say swarm. I love that when the Texans win, they say swarm on three. It's great. It's one of those slogans that really entirely depending on what happens over the course of the season could have become very annoying because they were really trying to make swarm a thing during the offseason. But if the team's good, works great.
Yeah. Yeah. It's 100% one of those where, especially in the offseason, especially on the offseason for the Houston Texans, where We've seen a little bit of corny. We've seen three new head coaches all bring in their own thing. So it'd be like, yeah, swarm.
And dude. Every coach does it. Every coach has their own little stupid saying. The Rams had that really, really not easy on the tongue one that took up a full T-shirt. Remember that one before the start of the year?
Yeah.
But hey, they made the playoffs, so, I mean, it worked.
Yeah. You have Jonathan Gannon doing shots, explosives.
Explosive plays. Pew, 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 pew. Yeah, they should have made a shirt for that. I don't think they did.
No, I think they're embarrassed.
They want to forget that moment ever happened as they move on to next year. Will Bobby Slowick be a head coach somewhere else next year? I don't know, but I know what C.J. Stroud thinks he is. His cockle's very warmed by Bobby Slowick.
Oh, we didn't think they were going to be in that coverage. But slow as a dog, man. Slow as that guy. So he had a feeling like we can hit him up top. And Nico did a great job creating separation. I tried to do my best to get it out there. And I remember, like, watching Michael Vick and Deshaun Jackson. The first play of the game, I think it was, like, 2010 or something like that. And they just let it fly. Once I knew the first play was going to be that, I just kept thinking about that. So, man, it's cool just to see Nico just ball out, and that was a special first play, man. Special.
What a throwback. Vic to Deshaun Jackson with the Eagles, when Vic had his little mini Eagles run. While we're just talking about old football stuff, one of my favorite dynamics of Michael Vick joining that Eagles team, and just to see the transformation of Eagles fans who love dogs, oh, my little fur babies, all of a sudden look the other way when Michael Vick was playing well for them and was a borderline MVP. But when the Eagles first signed him, there's this clip that went viral, and Sean, maybe we can find this before the end of the show, of a couple of Eagle fan women who are singing, "Why Eagles, why?" instead of "Fly Eagles, fly." And it's like this really funny song about how they're upset that the Eagles signed Michael Vick. It's fantastic. We got to play it before the end of the show.
I will say,
I don't know why that had me thinking of that, but that is a hilarious moment in Eagles fan history.
The "Fly Eagles, fly" always gets repurposed so many times.
It's easy to repurpose.
Yeah.
It's easy.
I also like when Riley Cooper had his incident.
They didn't make a song about that.
At the Kenny Chesney concert.
They didn't make a song about that.
No. I didn't see those ladies picketing.
Rappers say it too. It's fine. Is that what Riley Cooper said afterwards? Is that what the picketers said? Like, how dare they go after Riley Cooper? Because Philadelphia is low-key racist too. Like, and Philadelphia is one of those towns where there's actually diversity in the city. And yet, like, there's a pretty good amount of racism there too. But, oh, Boston's the worst in the world. Part of my family's from Philadelphia. I'm not saying they are, but I'm just saying, like, I know Philadelphia. I know Philadelphia people.
Super backfire.
I know Philadelphia people.
Yeah, people keep saying that Boston's racist. And being from Boston, let me tell you, it's not that racist. You know, it's really racist, Philly. And I have family in Philly too.
It's the old whataboutism. The old razzle-dazzle. Just dropped it on you, baby. Paul Galacho, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, 713-780-3776 to call it, to text in too. You can join on Twitch as well, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. Saw a very interesting take about D'Amico Ryans and his Coach of the Year candidacy. Honestly, until I saw this, I would not have given D'Amico Ryans Coach of the Year. I'm starting to change my tune on that. You'll find out why next. Stick around.
You're watching ESPN 97.5 with your ears.
High definition.
Welcome back to the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's your host, former Shorecrest Preparatory All-District Safety, Paul Gallant.
Stroud, wide open for the touchdown, is the fullback, Andrew Beck.
If you don't like Joe Buck, that was your moment to get mad at Joe Buck. Texans are up 14-3. Looking like they're going to run away with it. Joe, couldn't we get an Indy is stunned? Or an Indy will have to pump in crowd noise the rest of this game. Because they are in shock. Could have added that. You know, I'm no play-by-play guy. The only time I've ever done play-by-play was for upstate New York high school football. Before that, it was for the Beanie Babies that I had play football because I did not have Madden growing up. Wasn't allowed to play sports video games, so I just had a bunch of Beanie Babies play football. Had like rosters, and I would do play-by-play into a tape recorder. I'm not kidding about this. We got to find the lost archives of play-by-play that Paul Gallant's done of Beanie Babies back in the day. But D'Amico Ryans and the Houston Texans are AFC South champions thanks to that win on Saturday night, 23-19, and thanks to the Jaguars face-planting against the Tennessee Titans yesterday in a 28-20 loss. So the Texans are going to play the Cleveland Browns Saturday, 3:30 at NRG Stadium. It's an interesting matchup because the Coach of the Year voting, I believe, takes place on Wednesday. And in my opinion, the top two candidates for Coach of the Year are Kevin Stefanski and D'Amico Ryans. But if the season were to end, and it did, the way that it just did, I would have given it to Kevin Stefanski. And I say Kevin Stefanski, even though the Browns did lose the last game of the year with another quarterback under center, their fifth quarterback of the year. I say Stefanski because I think the Browns have overcome a lot this year. But there have been some compelling counterarguments made. One of them is by Kevin Cooper. For those who don't know, Kevin Cooper used to be the head of media relations for the Houston Texans and used to be intimidating as hell. We're talking about like a and he's going to hate me if I say this because he's a Syracuse guy. He's a good guy. I like Kevin. But he used to intimidate me a little bit because he was very aggressive. Like if you were trying to get questions out of Gary Kubiak or some of the Texans, like he would step in and lay down the law. Very businesslike. Just get out of the way. But now, he is no longer that man. He tweeted this out, and this is a fantastic tweet. And I think this is the argument for D'Amico Ryans. I see this push, tweeted Kevin, for Stefanski to be the coach of the year. I'm old enough to remember Kubiak in 11, rolling out Schaub, Leinart, Yates, and Delhomme, winning the Texans' first division title, and not receiving one vote for coach of the year. Miss me with that. D'Amico deserves your vote, and it's not close. So it is interesting that he brings up how Gary Kubiak didn't get a vote for Coach of the Year that season. And it is weird, the Coach of the Year award. It does seem to be a, what did you do for me last year, and what did you do for me this year? Going into the year, Stefanski was a guy that I think a lot of us thought would potentially be fired if things didn't work out with Deshaun Watson. And things didn't work out with Deshaun Watson. But the Browns' defense has a lot of talent, to piggyback off of what Kevin's saying here. And the Texans defense that year had a lot of talent. Now, was J.J. Watt J.J. Watt that season? No, not yet. He wasn't in the playoffs. Was the Texans defense, though, the strength of the team? Yeah, in 2011, down the stretch, it had D'Amico Ryans on it. It had Brian Cushing. It had Jonathan Joseph in his first year. It had Daniel Manning. They had two really good free agent signings in that offseason. Mario Williams, when he was healthy, was a part of that defense. Like, they had some players. So maybe that's why Gary Kubiak didn't win Coach of the Year. The Browns have some players. They got a lot of good defensive players, right? I mean, Myles Garrett, probably the best defensive player in the league this year. You can make an argument for T.J. Watt, I suppose, if you want. But that Browns defense has a lot of good players. I do think that Stefanski deserves credit for also making the Browns win without Nick Chubb and with their quarterback situation being what it is. But D'Amico Ryans has been operating with a roster that, yes, has C.J. Stroud, but largely last year, going into this season too, this was a last-place roster last year. You know, there's a reason that everyone thought going into the year that Bryce Young had the best situation, ironically, that he was playing with. They thought the Texans had a terrible situation. Stroud wasn't even in the top 10 rookie situations, according to ESPN, going into the year. So, if you want to make the argument that D'Amico Ryans did more with less, he definitely has that over Kevin Stefanski. The difference is, though, that he has the rookie quarterback, and that's where you're going to have to draw the line if you want to have this debate about who should be Coach of the Year. Honestly, it would be nice if we could wait to give the vote until after that game's done, right? Like, whoever wins that game gets Coach of the Year. I think that would be fair. if we do it that way. But of course, the NFL doesn't do it that way. It's about what you do in the regular season, not about what you do during the playoffs. I feel like Marty Schottenheimer, the year that the Chargers went 14-2, I feel like he won Coach of the Year, and he got fired because they lost the first game. Because Marlon McCree fumbled an interception, and Schottenheimer got fired for that.
He won Coach of the Year a couple years before that.
Okay, so he didn't win that one.
I have all the winners up.
Okay.
Sean Payton won in 06.
Mm-hmm.
I think, did Schottenheimer win a different? No, I don't know. But it does seem like it's either you win like 14, 13 games, and you get to win it like Ron Rivera going 15-1 with the Panthers back in the day.
Right.
Or obviously Belichick going 16-0, you know, 14 wins. John Harbaugh, the Lamar MVP year. And then other than that, it's like, hey, did we think you were bad and you won games? Hey, here's the good. Brian Daboll last year, Coach of the Year, with 9-7 for the New York Giants.
The thing with Daboll is, and this is the other BS dynamic, he's in New York.
Yes.
Just like Sauce Gardner was in New York. Just like Garrett Wilson was in New York. And again, all those guys did very well last year. But the New York mystique always adds an element of bull bleep on top of the awards.
And honestly, I think that Cleveland also benefits from that, because any success you have with the Browns, it's like, and can you believe he's doing this with the Cleveland Browns?
And without Deshaun Watson. Where, yes, mostly the Cleveland Browns.
But I mean, I just say that because I have the winners up, and in 2020, the winner of the Coach of the Year, NFL Coach of the Year, was Kevin Stefanski of the Cleveland Browns.
So he's already won it. Oh, if he's already won it, then D'Amico's won it. Because this, again, it's dumb. Like, there's weird rhyme and reason attached to this one specifically. Sean, how many times has Bill Belichick won Coach of the Year?
Three times.
Three. Wouldn't you argue that he should have won it every year?
Yes, he won it. And also the 3 years he won it, he went 14-2, 16-0, and 14-2. So probably the three best records that they had their entire run. And that's also over 20 years of being the best coach in the league. Bruce Arians has won it twice.
Right, because he came in for Pagano the first time with the Colts.
He won it two times in 3 years, actually. And you know who else won it two times in 3 years? This is gonna blow your mind.
Oh, man.
It's pretty recent.
Should I give a guess, or should you just give it to me?
I'll just give it to you, because we can sit here naming coaches. That would be surprising if they won two Coach of the Years.
Nathaniel Hackett.
No. Carolina Panthers head coach Ron Rivera in 2013 and then in 2015.
Oh, wow. That is surprising. He got canned today.
Yes, and I believe his career head coaching record is one game under 500. I believe I have that right. Yes.
Okay.
He is 102 and 103 in his head coaching career.
Shout out to him.
Two-time Coach of the Year award winner.
One of the best coaches in NFL history.
One short of Bill Belichick.
That's funny. That's crazy. D'Amico Ryans. Press conference afterwards. I know sometimes when we hear D'Amico, it's coach speak, but D'Amico, seeing how happy he was, like, a lot of coaches just don't smile and they are robotic. And D'Amico is an ex-player, and it's funny hearing him in a press conference versus seeing him on the sidelines. It's a very massive and stark difference between those two versions of D'Amico Ryans. But I thought we got a little extra D'Amico Ryans in the post-game press conference, and deservedly so, because he's done a hell of a job. Here he is saying that it means everything to me to provide this opportunity for the organization that drafted him, that he originally played for.
It means everything to me to provide this opportunity for our organization, right? To see the smiles on everyone's faces, not just the players, but all of our support staff, the owners, right? Cal and Hannah, right? Them entrusting us, right? To see the smiles on Nick's face, like everybody, right, is I'm happy to be a part of it. I'm happy to see everyone smiling, happy, excited about this moment, excited about this opportunity that we have in front of us, right? It's a proud moment for our organization. So I'm happy to be a part of it and happy to be along for the ride.
Hell yeah. Could use a little more gusto there, though, D'Amico. But D'Amico did have a message for the fans. Back in Houston.
To our fans back home, I mean,
I know you guys feel the same emotions I'm feeling. There's a lot of ups and downs through this game, but man, I know our fans are partying and they're excited, and we're happy to give them that excitement. We're happy to put smiles on our fans' faces. They deserve it, right? They deserve it, and we were happy that they're proud of their team. And for us to be in position to go to the playoffs and give our fans something to cheer about even more, right? It's we're thankful for their support, their continued support. Thankful for all our fans who made it up here. We had fans who showed up here at Indy. Man, we're just thankful for the overwhelming support, the excitement that we have all around the town.
You better be wearing Texans gear this week, people. You better be wearing it. Personally, I think I'm going to go find a throwback Texans jersey before they added the logo on the top of the back.
Oh, yeah.
Like the throwback, the authentic throwbacks.
Before 2017. Or
right, but not the, but also not the throwback where they made the collar like thicker
seven times
and red.
Too big?
Yeah, where it looks like that, like it's you've slashed the throat of a cow. And it's just bleeding everywhere. Like, that was my first thought when I saw that. I was like, why do we look like our throats have been slashed? It's a little bit a little bit too much.
So, like, 2011 era.
Right.
I mean, D'Amico Ryan's.
Before they OJ'd their jersey. So, yeah, that was the era.
Coach D'Amico jersey.
Coach D'Amico, that player D'Amico jersey. Hell yeah.
Well, yes, but right. I the coach of this year's team.
Mm-hmm. Bring him back.
Or a Cushing jersey.
Ooh.
Wear it to the gym.
Got it. Is he still on there? I wonder if he's still like the strength and conditioning coach.
We'll research it in the break.
We will research that in the break. We might give you that terrible Y Eagles Y song too. It's the Paul Gallant Show. The Texans are AFC South champions. Today is the greatest day of your life. Stick around.
ESPN 97.5.com. Fighter of the night, man.
One is screaming, he's so happy. The other screaming, a passionate shout. It's the night, man.
Welcome back to the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here is your ambiguously gay host, Paul Gallant.
We just want to let you all know that this is just the beginning. This is the first goal. This is just the beginning.
I saw that clip this morning and was wondering if the Texans had a welcome back to Houston party late on Saturday night after the Colts got back. And then I realized, oh, wait, D'Amico Ryans just hasn't aged a day since 2011, where he did that there as starting middle linebacker for the Houston Texans after they had won it for the first time.
He does look exactly the same.
He has not aged at all. And I know the saying. I mean, I don't see color, number one. But number two, I know the saying. And it seems that it is true.
Yes.
Not that I would know anything about it because, again, I do not see color. But the man is still
ageless wonder,
in great shape and looking like he could put on some shoulder pads and go out
there. Did you see him on the sideline on the last play from the Colts where Goodson drops it? And the way he reacts and just runs off screen. It's crazy.
Oh, I missed it. I'm going to have to check that out.
Yeah, he's in red. But you'll see him, like, if you're watching the sideline, he just jumps, like, arms go all over the place, and he runs away.
You know, I'm going to sound like I'm a bobo, like I'm a Texans propagandist here, but, I mean, think about this. Since 2011, they have won 7 division titles.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really impressive. And I know
I've seen some tweets around there comparing that to the rest of the division. The rest of the division, I think it's 2 each for the 3 of them. So
right.
That's 6. 6, the rest of the AFC South. 7, the Houston Texans.
They've been running this with a battle red fist, you could argue. Now, yeah, there's always it's the AFC South deal. Forget about that.
And the rest of those teams have made a AFC title game. The Texans still have not.
Right.
I think some of them have made a couple. I mean, not the Jags, but I think, did the Titans make more than one?
I think so.
Well, and then the Colts have made a few. I mean, because that's basically counting all of the Andrew Luck era.
The Titans definitely had the one seed 1 year, and I'm trying to remember.
Oh, no, that was the year they lost to the Bengals.
Right.
Okay, so maybe they only made one. Anyway, they've all made a AFC title game. The Texans have still yet to do that. But running the AFC South in particular, Texans.
Right, just like the Astros. Astros, yeah, they lost the ALCS, which they reached for the seventh straight time, to the also AL West Texas Rangers. But what did they win this year?
The division.
They won the division. And there's credit there. There's credit where credit is due. And
tip of the cap.
A big tip of the cap. The Texans, they backed into this AFC South title. No doubt about it. The Jaguars were 8-3 at one point. The Astros backed into the AL West title. And look, we can't all be the Astros. I know there's a lot of fans with you wear a monocle now. You wear a three-piece suit. And you think you fancy in your Gucci shoes that say hashtag blessed on the side of them. Right? Like, the Astros have made us all a little arrogant and to the point of, like, we don't even want to do time with the Houston Texans. We don't want to go to NRG Stadium. But the Texans have done a pretty damn good job considering that Bill O'Brien has been here as a general manager, that Jack Easterby has been here as an advisor or something. I don't even know.
Well, he eventually got like was a vice president.
Yeah.
Like, he eventually got a title.
They fired two black coaches after 1 year back to back, which is definitely a dynamic that drew ire from the rest of the league. Their quarterback stopped wanting to play here and then went on a sliding into anyone with pajangas and a set of legs asking for a massage. And through it all, they've won 7 division titles. Doesn't matter, Brian. Does not matter. AFC South champions. So we've come far, guys. We've come so far. And it does matter in the end that the Houston Texans did this once again.
Thank you. It does matter.
RIP to Chester, right? Is that the Linkin Park guy? I don't know. Anyway,
I can't help you there.
Why can't you help me?
I don't know the dead Linkin Park guy's name. I don't know any of the Linkin Park.
I think
guy's
it's Chester. Anyway, listen, I don't know anything about
music. What an end to the show. Started.
I know it was great. The segment was going great, and then I was just like, "Who's the guy that died in Linkin Park?"
I would say that it went off the rails when you decided to quote Linkin Park, but then when
did the reverse quote though?
Yes. To
it's the uplifting version.
Twist the words.
Sometimes you just got to twist
beautiful
words.
Beautiful words written by the dead guy.
CJ Stroud is on the Pat McAfee show, so I'm sure on tomorrow's show we'll react to some of what he had to say.
Who he called a pedophile.
Do you think that Pat McAfee tried to get CJ Stroud to go full Aaron Rodgers?
They should just one time, because this is like the second or third time on the show.
Yeah.
They should just ask him, like, just have the questions they're going to ask Aaron Rodgers and just ask them to CJ Stroud.
You know what? I think Stroud would give an interesting answer. I don't think Stroud would, like, D'Amico Ryans would give a boring answer. CJ Stroud would talk for a while and probably say something interesting along the way. And then thank God.
That's why not only is he a division-winning quarterback, he's also the good guy of the year for the Houston Texans.
Good guy of the year, rookie of the year, MVP? Hell yeah.
Super Bowl champion?
Ooh! I'm getting hyped.
We got into the show. We got it.
I know. I don't want to.
Too excited.
I got a deep steel blue balls ending the show like this. This is ridiculous. But hey, enjoy the national title tonight. Go Houston Texans. We'll be back at it tomorrow at 10. Connor and Beard are up next. So long. Farewell. Have yourselves a wonderful Monday. Peace.
Warms the cockles of the heart.
ESPN 97.5 on Twitch. I don't get it.
There are things in this world that we will never fully understand.